are here to make submissions.
Yes, sir.
We are opening the meeting, Devo. We are now operating. The meeting is officially open. The purpose or the main item today in the agenda is the public hearing on the Financial Sector Laws Amendment Bill, B15-2020. Are there apologies? Alan, you said there is an apology of Honorable Vessel. I think that's the apology that we have. I'll also request apology that for a few minutes, I will just be dealing with some logistics for tomorrow's by-elections here in Gauteng. That's the apology that I'm giving. I will come back after some minutes. I won't take long, I hope. In the meantime, I will request the Honorable Abraham to chair the meeting. Honorable Abraham, are you there in the platform?
Yes, I'm here, sir.
Okay. Can you proceed with the next item? I will come back after I will have sorted the logistics for tomorrow's by-elections. Nokse, are you still there?
Yes, sir, I'm here. I think the next item would be a presentation by COSATU.
Okay, over to you.
Thank you. At this point, we are going to get the presentation from COSATU. Can you come in? Comrade Matthew, is it you?
No, thanks, Comrade Chair. We can come in. I think just give me a second to try to share the screen quickly. Hopefully I can manage it without collapsing anything. Okay. I've managed to make history, Comrade Chair, by figuring out how to share the screen, so I don't need to abuse Alan for once. I think, Comrade Chair, let me just, and I hope my connection is decent, but I just want to thank the committee for giving us space as COSATU to indicate our support for the bill and also our one proposed amendment to it. We think this is quite a critical bill, and we're quite pleased that it's before Parliament now. So, Chair, I think we just want to welcome the bill firstly. I think to thank Treasury for tabling it. We believe as COSATU, it's a necessary bill. It's long overdue intervention by government in the financial sector. And I think, Chair, our motivation is based upon the premise that we believe it is going to help to protect ordinary workers and depositors. In particular, Comrade Chair, we think it's going to protect pensioners, but also equally, Chair, it's going to protect the financial sector and the economy at large, and of course, government too. Chair, we are, though, worried about one specific clause in the bill when we come to it in our one proposed amendment, clause 166W of the bill, where it deals with the issue of the ranking of creditors when it comes to the disposal of liquidated banks' assets. Chair, we believe that specific provision, the only provision we believe needs to be amended in the bill, to ensure that the most vulnerable depositors, specifically honourable members, pensioners and the unemployed and workers in general, including the workers at those banks, that they should be prioritized and they should be first in the queue when banks are wound up and assets are disposed of. We believe, Comrade Chair, that to date, South African law has actually failed to ensure these vulnerable categories of creditors are prioritized when it comes to the liquidation of company assets. Our motivation as COSATU for why we support this bill is that it's born from our practical spirit, I think, as all of us would know. It was also born from the need to protect workers and the pensioners, unemployed, SMEs, even the state itself, despite all of its resources. And, of course, the economy and the financial sector at large from what we often see as reckless behavior in many financial institutions. And not just us in South Africa have been affected by these instances, but across the world. So we think here that we have learned from the experiences. There's a need for the bill, specifically we believe is going to help to empower the Reserve Bank to provide meaningful oversight over the sector and the state at large, and where necessary to capacitate them to intervene in the sector. Chair, I think just to refresh honourable members' memories, and I think Comrade Chair Mashongai will also specifically know, coming from Limpopo, about the painful experience we haven't had in the past. I think all of us have seen, if you remember a few years ago, what nearly happened with the African Bank, which required very decisive intervention by the Reserve Bank, by Treasury, by the other commercial banks, to save it, to save deposit assets, to try to save those workers' jobs as well. So we also saw with VBS in Limpopo very, very recently, a few years ago, what happened there. We saw that workers' pensions, municipal workers in particular, were lost. We saw, not just in Limpopo, honorable members, but in other provinces, Northwest, Free State, Gauteng too, where they had invested in VBS. Workers and pensioners lost their savings. Pensions were simply lost. And again, the Reserve Bank and the commercial banks and government had to intervene to clean up the mess of reckless and often criminal behavior in banks. Chair, I think it's to state the obvious, but when these things happen, it is the poor who are hit the hardest. We have seen workers losing their jobs and their savings. We've seen workers of those specific banks, like at VBS, losing their jobs and their pensions, and nothing is left for them. We've seen pensioners lose life savings and literally left to fend for themselves. I think honourable members would remember the painful images we saw in Limpopo of pensioners in the 80s, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, having to queue from the middle of the night out of desperation to try to withdraw the money, which was already gone. We've seen small businesses losing what little money they have, being forced to retrench and to close the doors. Chair, I think internationally, we can see many examples which again alert us to the serious danger, I think as Treasury had highlighted in the presentation to the committee, of the contagion effect. We saw what happened in Iceland, and it often can take one simple little rumor or incident to spark a run on banks. We saw it happening in Britain about 12 years ago. I think the Royal Bank of Scotland, we saw it in the US with the two housing banks, etc. We don't think, Honourable Chair, that right now, given the pandemic, the recession, the very depleted public fiscal resources the government has currently, that South Africa would be in a strong position to withstand such a crisis. So hence, even greater need to pass this bill. Equally, Chair, we don't think it's fair, and we know government has got no choice, but it's not fair for government to be forced, literally blackmail, to spend billions of taxes, workers, taxpayers' money, bailing on banks. We know there is no choice. You cannot allow these banks to fail for obvious reasons. But again, it's literally pointing a gun to the head of government to say we can engage in reckless behavior in the banks and government will pick up the tab for us. Chair, and of course, as COSATU, we're very sensitive to any bleeding of state finances because it'll be workers in the public sector, entities, SOEs will be told there is no money for the salary increases to keep up with inflation, the pensions might be decimated, they'll be retrenched. Public services will be under severe pressure. I think Comrade Chair also is quite critical, given that we are the sole remaining member of the G20, which doesn't have such legislation, to quickly put it into effect. Again, Comrade Chair, you know, as we're in economic recession, we are competing as many other countries with less challenges to attract investment. We can't afford to be behind the rest of the world. Chair, so I think our provisions, our support for the bill are largely centered on two broad sets of provisions. I think one is around the depositors insurance funds. We believe this is a wise and a prudent provision to have there, so we support it. We think Comrade Chair is going to help to protect ordinary workers and depositors, but in particular pensioners, from the worst effects of banks when they collapse. If we had such a provision 5 years ago, Chair, we think many of the pensioners in Mbembe would not have been left completely destitute when VBS collapsed. Equally, Comrade Chair, it's going to help to protect the state resources from being drained by having to bail out banks at exorbitant costs. But I think, Chair, it's also critical, and this obviously can be dealt in regulations and other administrative interventions, but that these insurance premiums must be affordable. They should not be become a burden to ordinary depositors. Chair, I think also what we support as COSATU, we need provisions which capacitate the state. We believe there are quite a few provisions in this bill which will help to capacitate the state, in particular the Reserve Bank, the Financial Sector Conduct Authority and Treasury, to ensure they're able to fulfill their duties, their legal duties, to hold the financial sector to account, oversee it, and where necessary to undertake the necessary interventions. Chair, one specific proposed amendment to the bill, and it's only one proposed amendment, is it on clause 166W, subclause 2, this A, B, and C, which deals with the ranking of claims. So we're very worried about the proposed ranking in the bill. We hope we've interpreted it incorrectly, but if our understanding of it is correct, it's worrying to us. So it appears to us, Comrade Chair, that when the assets of the banks are disposed of, that the first in the queue would be the secured lenders. Those would be banks who have lent to the bank in question, other kind of lenders or companies which have lent to the bank in question, which have got secured loans to those banks. From our understanding of the proposed ranking, is that unsecured creditors or ordinary depositors will be ranked in essence fourth in the queue. So that means workers and pensioners, SMEs will be fourth in the queue. Well, and that for us is a huge matter of concern, Comrade Chair. Just to unpack it, why we're concerned is that ordinary workers or pensioners, they cannot afford the delays in accessing their very small savings. Often it takes months, sometimes even years, for these assets to be dispersed. And these are people who have no other source of income. Pensioners have no other source of income. Workers live for the salary month to month. So when their funds are depleted, they are thrown out into the street, they can lose their houses, the property, etc., for no fault of their own. Companies and banks, they have other sources of income, they have other assets, they have significant resources. They can afford to take a hit, but ordinary pensioners and workers, the unemployed, they literally cannot take a hit. But again, we've seen time and again, they're left sitting on the curbside. I think members might recall the issue of the Aurora mine about 10 years ago. Those mine workers are still waiting for their assets, for the small little salaries, 10 years later. But the liquidators, the companies, have long ago received their funds. So, Chair, for us, this kind of an approach to the disposal of assets is one which will leave workers and pensioners at risk of receiving nothing at the end. Chair, I think for us, at a principal level, that kind of a ranking is simply wrong, it's immoral. We also don't believe, Comrade Chair, that it can be interpreted as being in line with the constitutional requirements for legislation to be equitable. We can't place workers and pensioners behind large banks. We don't think that's fair, and equally cannot be rational in any interpretation. And we don't think that would pass a progressive interpretation of the Constitution, honourable members. Chair, so our proposal for Clause 166W2 is that the ranking just should simply be amended. It should be amended to put that unsecured creditors, specifically, Chair, pensioners, the unemployed and workers are ranked first in the queue to receive their money or when the assets are disposed of. And that can be a simple re-ranking of Clause 166W, 2A, B, and C. But Chair, we think that the way the bill is worded in that specific clause, it's a little bit vague. And it might be critical, in fact, we would hope that we can convince members and Treasury the need to explicitly state that it'll be pensioners, the unemployed and workers who will secure first preference during the disposal of bank assets. And that should include those workers of those banks because they also will lose their jobs. So in conclusion, Comrade Chair and honorable members, I think we want to say as COSATU that we welcome this bill. We support it. We believe it's a very progressive, a long overdue bill. We hope to see Parliament passing it as a matter of priority. We would not want it to see it being delayed for too long unnecessarily. Chair, I think we would want to agree with government. We believe it's going to help to protect, through the Depositors Insurance Fund, it will help protect millions of workers and pensioners in the state and the economy of their savings, of their investments, etc. We believe the provisions are going to further capacitate the state and the Reserve Bank to play the critical oversight roles. Chair, we hope, though, that Parliament will agree to our specific single proposed amendment with regards to the ranking of creditors. I mean, again, Chair, we don't think it can be acceptable or moral for pensions of workers to be left waiting for months and years to access what is left of the very, very meager savings. Equally, Comrade Chair, members, workers and pensioners shouldn't have to wait to receive what is left after secured creditors have had their fill. So lastly, Comrade Chair, we'd want to see this provision being included in the bill now. We appreciate government might say they have not had time to think about it, but Chair, if we delay it for another bill, that could be in 5 years' time. We think Parliament is fully capacitated to make the necessary amendments now. It will not be a large leap from the provision of the existing bill, but simply a reordering of the ranking of creditors. But Chair, we think this will help really further extend the very progressive provisions of this bill and also equally help to ensure that our pensioners, our workers are properly protected going forward. So that's our presentation in a nutshell, Comrade Chair. I hope I've not taken too long, but thank you for members and for the committee for giving us space to raise our views and our support for the bill. Thank you, Comrade Chair.
Thank you so much, Comrade Matthew. This point we will give over to Petrinity to make their presentation. Petrinity.
Thanks very much, Chair Evan. Let me also quickly just share my screen with you. We're going to enlarge it. Right. Chair Abram, can you see my screen?
Yes. Yes, my dear. Please go ahead.
Okay, right. Thanks very much. Thank you, Chair. Yes, thank you for the opportunity to
excuse me,
and also think it's quite a huge leap forward
Hello.
In managing.
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, ma'am.
Yeah, your line is not very clear.
Yes.
I don't know what you can
yes.
do. Probably the first thing to do maybe would be to just switch off your video camera.
Really?
I'm sure you can do that. I don't know what's making it so unclear.
Right. Let me quickly do that. Right. Ma'am, can you hear me now?
Loud and clear.
Ma'am, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Okay, wonderful. That is great. thank you very much, ma'am, for the opportunity. Right. Just to give you a background, I am.
Oh my dear, you are born again.
My name is Judy. I've been a competition law and policy economist for the past 20 years, with recent experience in studies in future studies, and to become honored. Okay.
We can't hear you now. Petrinity? Petrinity, we lost you now.
Ms. Abraham, I think she was kicked off the platform. I just let in again, so she's off Libra Economy now.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you so much.
Good day, Chair. I'm back. I just want to make sure that you can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you. Welcome back.
Thank you so much, ma'am. Is it in order if I continue?
Yes, continue like that, yeah.
Right. Thanks very much, ma'am. I'm quickly going to share my screen again. I see the host disabled the participant screen sharing. Is it possible for you to enable my screen sharing again, ma'am?
Okay, Alan, would you assist there, please? Are you okay now?
See, I'm still disabled. So my screen sharing is still disabled.
Okay, they will try and help you.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.
Alan, are you winning?
Yes, he's winning.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Right, I'm going to start right out with my comments. The focus of my comments is section 19 of the bill that deals with the amendment to Section 18 of the Competition Act. Section 18 of the Competition Act deals with instances where the competition authorities try to review mergers are ousted, in particular by the Minister of Finance, where the merger approval is required in terms of the Banks Act or the Financial Markets Act. In all the years, I think it has happened once that the Minister of Finance actually intervened in a merger before the competition authorities and that they decided to take the merger out of the hands of the Competition Commission for purposes of proceeding with the merger. That was in 2005. In terms of this particular amendment that is foreseen in terms of the bill, not only the Minister of Finance but also the Reserve Bank Governor will also have that ability to remove the jurisdiction of the Competition Commission in instances where merger takes place in terms of Section 166S of the Financial Regulation Act. In other words, where an institution is allowed to enter into a merger where the Reserve Bank determines that it is necessary for an orderly resolution. My proposal, and I'm going to state this right from the start, have an understanding why I'm motivating for this, is to provide the competition authorities with the opportunity to review the merger within 6 months after implementation. So after that Section 166S process has started and once that merger has been implemented, within 6 months, to provide the regulator with the opportunity to review that merger. In other words, not to remove or to oust the jurisdiction of the competition authority, but to delay it. So the wording that we proposed in our submission basically has the effect of the following: within 6 months after a merger has been implemented in accordance with Section 166S of the Financial Sector Regulation Act, the Competition Commission shall commence with an investigation into the merger in accordance with Section 12A of the Competition Act. And then an important part, if any conditions are to be imposed, it must be done or it shall be imposed in consultation with the governor of the Reserve Bank. To keep that as a safe landing place, to make sure that the systemic aspects of the market is not compromised. So one provides the commission with her abilities, but still in consultation with the Reserve Bank. Now, I propose six arguments I argue that the proposal is important on the basis of six arguments. And they are as follows. The first one is that brand value and the client base may actually remain fairly well intact, even though we are dealing with a merger of this nature. Second point is that much effort is being expended in Africa in relation to financial markets that are quite problematic, and I will give you a couple of examples. Financial markets are subject to digital disruption, which also provides some impetus to make doubly sure it is an aspect that could increase concentration quite rapidly. Evidence of banks that have exploited consumer-centric regulation under COVID, so banks may be inclined to use a period of any kind of disruption to make some inroads or to exploit customers. Critical public interest issues that may arise as a result of the merger, which one could imagine, and it could be addressed via conditions. And then it's also in line with current approaches, which is actually quite interesting. So let me quickly look at the very first point, and that is the issue regarding brand value. So the first reason why I think that the Commission must be allowed to review that merger within a period of 6 months is the fact that brand value and client base may remain fairly well intact, especially if this regulatory process is well managed. And ironically, that is actually the purpose of the bill, to make sure that a bank that is not only necessarily failing, but that is likely to fail, or I think the words in the bill is imminent failure, that process is well managed to the effect of making sure that the depositors' money are kept safe. So the bill may actually work so well, or the act may work so well, that you have a situation where you have two fairly well-functioning companies merging, which may have an impact on concentration and the effect of lessening competition in that market. That is the first point. The second reason I would like to motivate with reference to the Africa experience. And we are tracking these developments on a daily basis. I think the first important thing that one should remember is that financial markets constitute an important part of Africa's structural transformation. And the reason for that is that financial markets have the responsibility to make sure that the unbanked gets banked. They are the providers of finance, whether it's large businesses or especially small businesses, small and medium-sized businesses. So although you have a situation where the different economies across Africa differ quite significantly from each other, it's interesting to see that the ways in which these different economies are moved and changed from a structural perspective are remarkably similar. But the interesting thing that you also see across Africa is that it is not so easy to deconcentrate financial markets. And in instances where you get a new entrant, it's often an entrant with particular digital capabilities that, again, relies on the telecommunications infrastructure, where you have other elements of competition that might be problematic, for example, network effects and the acquisition of critical mass in a very short period of time. So what ought to contribute to a process of deconcentration may actually, ironically, contribute to a new question of concentration. And that is the interesting dilemma that you have with financial markets at this moment. So I'm quickly going to show you some of the laws in Africa that we are seeing. I'm quickly going to run through them. Many of them aim to make sure that banks are well behaved in relation to consumers, and that is not necessarily in instances when markets are massively concentrated. That's even in markets that is fairly competitive. And you will also see here and there some regulatory attempts to be proactive, pretty much in the same way that this piece of legislation also tried to be proactive, anticipating issues of this nature. But if we look, for example, at Southern Africa, we have seen here in SA the introduction of Conduct of Financial Institutions Bill, aiming to protect financial customers against financial institutions, because a code of conduct that's filed. In Angola, we've seen the Competition Regulatory Authority have been making recommendations to government on the regulation and operationalization of the electronic payment system. This is some kind of a proactive attempt to make sure that that part or that the electronic system keeps intact with market developments. Zambia, the publication of prohibition against unwarranted charges and fees, the publication of regulations of specific charges, also an attempt to make sure that banks are not exploiting consumers. Namibia, publication of three documents, bank fees comparisons, regulations relating to unfair terms and transactions of contracts between banking institutions and customers, determination of the disclosure of bank charges. The examples that I'm giving here are examples from the past 12 months. So these are quite recent examples that I'm providing you with here, just to give an indication of Africa's struggle in ensuring that financial institutions remain well-behaved. East and Central Africa, Ethiopia is a very interesting example, and the change that I've mentioned here is very recent. The World Bank recently put pressure on Ethiopia to ensure that the two new entrants that will be entering their market, and this is in the telecoms industry, will also have the ability to provide mobile money service. So just to give an indication of the importance of mobile money, and remember, as I've mentioned before, mobile money comes with a new challenge of network effects and critical mass. In Rwanda, we've seen financial consumer protection laws coming into effect. Lately, there's been an outcry among users regarding banking costs being considered prohibitive and unjustifiably expensive. In Uganda, there was the publication of banking fees comparisons in an effort to improve transparency. North Africa, in Morocco, there's an investigation into collusion between banks and insurance companies. In Libya, the central bank published a report calling for the development of laws enhancing competition between banks. Egypt, new banking law containing provisions on fair competition has come into effect and makes provision for the regulation of latest technological developments in banking. And in Tunisia, quite interesting, and I'll just touch base on that now again, is an investigation into collusion post-exploitation during the pandemic. So I think what we have here, I think this is still a West African example. In Nigeria, there's also investigations into consumer protection aspects in relation to banks. There's a combined attempt by two sets of regulators in banking and telecoms to open up digital financial services. WAEMU, their central bank, prioritized financial inclusion and competition. Senegal, government was requested by consumer associations very recently to force banks to standardize their price lists. And in Benin, decree was promulgated establishing financial services regulator responsible for the regulation of competition in the financial services market and the relationship between financial institutions, consumers, and SMEs. So the reason why I'm providing you with all of these examples, and I'm mindful not to bore you with these, is just to explain how difficult it is to deconcentrate these markets, and that so many laws are now required to manage to regulate the conduct and therefore it is quite important that if it's at all necessary to preserve the structure of a financial market right up front, that opportunity should be taken. The third argument, why the Comcom must be allowed to consider a merger fairly soon after the implementation, is something that I've mentioned. Financial markets are subject to digital disruption, and in digital, the issue of critical mass is crucial, and the issue of first mover advantage may leave others behind. So if you have a situation where some of the two banks are first mover in any of those areas, you could actually have a situation of a runaway institution leaving others behind, making it very difficult for the Competition Commission to come back at a later stage in terms of other parts of the Act, which might take years to enforce in the context of litigation, just to try to normalize that market again. The fourth reason is evidence of banks having exploited regulations during COVID, and this was an example in Tunisia that we found. And that was interesting because even the spirit of those regulations have been quite clear. The regulations basically said that banks must postpone their loan repayments in relation to customers to mitigate the COVID-19 effects. So what did the banks do in Tunisia? They colluded on what? Well, they passed the loan repayment costs to the consumer. They charged additional interest. They imposed penalties for those late payments, and they imposed fees for the extended maturity of the loans. Keep in mind that this is happening during a disruption where consumers are also confused. Any instance of disruption open up opportunity for exploitation. The interesting thing is that in Tunisia, the banks actually motivated the violation, and they said, well, there was an absence of a legal and a regulatory framework governing the operation of a postponement of the loans and governing the repayment of such postponed loans. And they also said there's the non-existence of a decision by the Ministry of Finance in relation to that. So it is actually quite interesting. They knew what the spirit of the regulations were, but because the regulations were not complete in their view, they took a chance and exploiting that. And I do not want to speak out of turn, but in many instances, these large institutions get legal advice in relation to what are the loopholes in relation to this particular law and how can it be exploited. So this is just something that I wanted to emphasize, that one should be careful that, especially when you deal with some kind of a disaster type scenario, to be as proactive as possible to consider the complete event and the implications of that. And then the fifth argument is that conditions must serve to mitigate public interest effects. And we have moved beyond a regime where conditions only pertain to the merger situation in particular. Something that we have seen in relation to employment conditions is, for example, re-employment conditions. And that, for example, is where the Commission requires a merged entity to re-employ workers whenever vacancies arise in the future. And that sounds like something that may be quite useful for the Competition Commission to do in instances like a Section 166S situation, because you have a failure or an imminent failure, but maybe it can be solved with relatively few casualties, and people have to go in the short term, and one can understand that, but maybe in a year or two when there are again some vacancies, then it may be actually quite an ideal situation to be in the position to have that institutions calling previously retrenched employees and offering them some employment. It may also, the chance to review a merger may also provide with an opportunity to propose other conditions, for example, empowerment conditions, all conditions speaking to regulatory safeguarding, depending on what exactly caused the failure or the imminent failure, or monitoring conditions regarding performance in particular. None of these things will be possible if the Commission's jurisdiction is ousted completely and permanently. And then the last reason why I think it's important to keep the ComCom involved in the process, just on a delayed basis, is that it is in line with current approaches. What I'm suggesting is not completely out of context. The Act currently makes provision for the Commission having the ability to require the notification of small mergers for a period of up to 6 months after a merger has taken place. Small mergers are not typically notifiable, only intermediate and large mergers are, but there's already a provision in the Act making provision for the Commission to call mergers, which are small, to investigate them. Also, there's a section providing for conditions to be imposed in relation to such mergers, so that's also not out of the ordinary. What I would suggest in these instances is to keep the SARB involved to make sure that conditions do not compromise whatever has been achieved as a result of the process contemplated by the Bill. So that is probably a new kind of provision, but the Act, the Competition Act, makes provision for consultation with ministers, but that should not be a principal issue. It's also in line with the dual emphasis that we get in the Competition Act on competition and the public interest. And this is not something that is foreign to the competition authorities. It's been in the Act for the past 20 years, and it's been really properly implemented in the last 10 years at least. The Minister of Industry, Trade, Industry and Competition can also become involved on the basis of public interest grounds in any merger, not just large and intermediate, but also small mergers. So there is proper safeguards, and the Commission is well trained in looking at very, very complicated balancing acts. It's also in line with the Commission's policy approach, emphasizing complexity and the willingness to act on the temporal dimension. And we've seen this during COVID, and we've seen how successful that worked. But to retain that responsibility to act where it is urgent and where it is necessary, and that the short term is not prioritized over the long term, and that one does, that one makes sure that you do not save X amount of rand in the short term, but taking that amount and spreading it out over generations in terms of the effect of anti-competitive effects. And very interestingly, and this is something that we pick up in Africa, that there's an increased emphasis by competition authorities for rapid market repair. In other words, they come up with ways in which they want to prevent litigation as largely as possible with, in an effort to make sure that the market retains or goes back to the pre-harm situation as quickly as possible. For example, through additional alternative dispute resolution measures. So that, in a nutshell, is basically my motivation why I think it's important to retain the Competition Commission in the process, so that they have the opportunity to also see, is it necessary for this potential monster, maybe an APSA and a Standard Bank that has just merged, is it necessary to impose some conditions, whether it's behavioral or structural, and as I said, in consultation with the Reserve Bank. If there's any questions, I will gladly take them. Thanks very much, yeah, also for your patience regarding my connectivity issue. Thank you very much, Chair Abram.
Thank you so much, Odi. That was loud and clear. I think you had to be kicked out first so that you can come in clearer.
Yeah.
I think it was just a divine intervention. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes. Now, honourable members, we are at the item where it says deliberations, and at this point, I identify hands. Of course, I will be assisted by Teboho and Alan in identifying the hands of members who would like to speak. I think we're not necessarily closing the discussion to only honorable members. Any participant at this stage who would like to raise an issue is welcome to do so, but representing a particular structure. Thank you. Alan, Teboho, any hands over there?
For now, there's no hand.
All right. Okay. In the absence of hands or questions for clarity, maybe one is correct to say at this point the presentations have been noted, and I think there will be a specific day for the responses from National Treasury and other sectors that are attached to National Treasury, which are probably relevant to the bill. We will, on that particular day, make sure that the stakeholders that have presented here are invited to come and hear the responses, as well as probably make the points even clearer. But at this stage, before we adjourn, if I may, Comrade Matthew, do you have any point of emphasis that you would like to bring across at this time?
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairman. I think just the two points that we said. I think first, this is a progressive and a welcome bill. I think our experiences in South Africa and across the world, VBS is just a critical example of why we need such a bill. So I don't think anyone can really oppose its interventions or proposals. It's common sense. But I think really, Comrade Chair and members and Treasury colleagues, I think our one simple plea is that we need to find wording to insert in the ranking of creditors or when disposing of liquidated banks' assets, that we prioritize pensioners, workers, and unemployed in that ranking. They shouldn't be somewhere down the queue. They should be at the front of the queue, given their limited resources, the lack of other sources of income. So I think that's our fundamental emphasis, Comrade Chair, and hopefully between ourselves, honorable members, the legal advisors and Treasury would be able to find that kind of common understanding. I don't think anybody could be opposed to such a progressive call by COSATU. We're hopeful we'll find each other, Comrade Chair, but thank you very much. Thanks to colleagues in Treasury.
Okay, thank you so much, Comrade Matthew. Cody, you want to come in for the last shot?
Thank you very much, Chair Abraham. Maybe just the last point I'd like to raise, and that is that we are seeing across Africa how the different regulators learn from each other, and that is quite prevalent. And I think that will even get stronger under the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement. And in that context, I think it would be great if the South African Reserve Bank and this particular board could set the example of retaining as much oversight and retaining that responsibility of ensuring the competitiveness of markets because of the long-term effect that that may have. For example, Mozambique is also in the process of establishing a bill like this, and the long-term effect of that may be that we lose decades or that we save decades in terms of economic growth. One of the challenges that we have with economic in the economic regulatory context with learning by doing is that it often comes at a very great economic cost. And in order for Africa to move as fast as possible under the Continental Free Trade Agreement, it would be great if we could learn from each other and if South Africa could take the lead in that respect. Thank you very much again.
Okay. No, thank you so much, Odi. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you so much for the input. We have intentionally given you sufficient time so that you can be able to expatiate on your points, so that the respondents, if I may, are also on the platform, so that they could also be able to hear exactly what you had to raise. Thank you so much. The fact that you are always prepared to participate in the public hearings really enhances our democracy. And for us, we are really thankful. We are here as a community so that we not only make laws and perform oversight over departments, but also we are also here to ensure public participation. So thank you so much for making our jobs even more easy. Alan, Jebufo, are there any announcements?
Just that tomorrow morning's meeting, 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock, it's the public hearings on the Pension Funds Amendment Bill. I will be sending out the link immediately after this meeting. I've already sent through the submissions and presentation and the agenda.
Thank you very much. Alan, we have seen the presentations. Honorable members, thank you so much for attending this meeting. We thank National Treasury and the various sectors that are attached to National Treasury that we have seen on the platform. We thank parliamentary functionaries as well for the assistance on the program. Thank you so much once again to the stakeholders for making sure that they come and make their views heard in the People's Assembly. Thank you so much for that. Honorable members, everybody, thank you. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.